Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. You've joined an important conversation for Fabric about what it means to be together. It has some elements that might feel surprising, like how it's not about dissolving a sense of self for the sake of the collective, but rather how the deep connection of loving and being with others demands we bring the truest, boldest version of ourself we can. In this episode, you'll hear Melissa Locke and Greg Meyer kicking off the conversation about togethering.
Thanks for joining us. So we're talking about togethering these next 4 weeks. How are we together? How are we doing together? We're living in a time when we've really never been more connected, right? We can connect from wherever we are, and we can physically be very mobile more than ever before in human history. So we've never been more connected, and we've never been more apart. You know, this isn't just me saying this. I'm guessing you all feel this. But in case we need some, you know, data to back this up and some science and some really smart people, the U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, has written a groundbreaking book called Together. And he traveled when he started his role around the country. He poured through research to try to identify what is the, you know, thing that I should be focusing on. And the common thread that was seeming clearly to be a root cause and a contributor to poor health outcomes, to epidemics that were sweeping worldwide, including drug and alcohol addiction, anxiety, depression, violence. And the thread he identified was loneliness. We need more together ways of being together. That's what we're talking about. So where to start? Dr. Murthy's research convinced him of a basic prescription that each of us can practice to start pushing back against this epidemic and transforming it. And he says, togethering takes time alone. So that's what we're talking about today. This weird idea that to be less lonely, I need to take time alone. Kind of strange. So more than being by yourself, solitude is being with yourself. And actually being like more okay with that. Can we start to learn to befriend ourselves, get to know ourselves a little better, deepening that inner connection, which then, of course, becomes the foundation for our outer connections, right? So I think we know this, don't we, that how we are with each other, how I am with you and with my partner Joe and with my kids, with our community and neighbors, how I show up in the world, that really is related to how I am together with myself in here. So how are you with yourself? If you want to be together, you need to know how to be alone. And interestingly, the great commandment that is referred to in all four accounts of Jesus' life and teachings was making this exact same point. Jesus was asked, what is the one thing, you know, the one thing question that we all often want to know? What should I do? What do I need to know? What's the one thing? And Jesus, in response, really leaned on wisdom from his tradition and they would all have known about from 2,000 years before Jesus even. And I'm going to read it. It's going to be up on the screen here. Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest? And Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. He only asked for one thing. He got two things, bonus, right? But do you notice in both of those things, there's this assumption that's baked in, and it's you. It's the inherent value of that whole heart, that whole soul, that mind, that strength of self that is deep inside you, that self with which you love, right? That self that allows you to express love to the God of, as you understand God, and to one another. So how do you value, love, get to know that whole self inside of you? I think it might involve spending time with it, just like anything else, right? Like, we get to know people by spending time with them. We get to know ourselves by spending time with ourselves. You know, maybe it's that simple. So why do we all feel so funky about this? And maybe we don't. Maybe we don't. That's what we're going to find out. No matter what you think, how you feel today about time just with yourself, every one of us can grow in getting to know ourselves better and spending time with ourselves. So I think something that helps us embrace solitude is understanding a couple things that solitude isn't. And one of the distinctions that I want to make is that solitude doesn't mean just being alone. Okay, so it's not the same as being alone. Some of us have plenty of that, right? If we live alone, that physical isolation just gets really old after a while. Some of us might be desperate for some time alone. I mean, I've heard of some parents who might, like, go to the bathroom just so nobody's bugging them for something right at the moment. That's their only place to be alone. So, you know, living and spending a lot of time alone in isolation can be a risk factor for loneliness, but it can also be a condition that you need for solitude. So solitude isn't the same as being alone, but it's also very different from being lonely. Lonely. Okay, let's land on lonely. What is loneliness? Murthy said it's this thread that he was seeing. So let's talk about it. So we're social creatures, right? Our well-being depends on our connections. Murthy writes of this patient that came in to see him, and he said this was really where his realization started. He asked his patient, normal doctor question, you know, how can I help? And the patient had had some, like, blood pressure and diabetes complications going on. So it surprised Murthy to hear him say, "Doctor, the worst thing that ever happened to me was winning the lottery." What? So it turns out this guy had actually won the lottery. He had been a neighborhood baker and gave it up in order to move to this life of luxury that he had been told was what he wanted and thought that was the ticket to health and happiness. Turns out he became withdrawn, overweight, and miserable. So let me just read you his quote quick. "I traded in my friends and a job I loved and moved to a neighborhood where people keep to themselves in their giant houses. It's lonely." Loneliness is that feeling of lack of the connections that you need. So it doesn't only happen to extroverts. It doesn't only happen to people with not enough money. Introverts can feel lonely. Introverts can feel lonely. Lottery winners can feel lonely. We all need relationships that give us the secure sense of belonging as who we really are. And just as a side note, that's why we have groups, spaces to know and be known, to build trust and to build these habits of connecting in ways that give us that sense of true belonging. This connection that we in the world all need more of. So what defines loneliness is how we feel inside, not what's happening or how many people are around outside. Have you ever been in a crowd or even a group where you didn't feel seen or known for who you are? Whew, lonely. So loneliness isn't fun. It's painful, and it's something we want to escape, and we should. Solitude is different. Solitude is not a state of loneliness. It's actually a key antidote to it. Again, who is that one person that you'll always be around? You'll always have around? It's you. So solitude is this sacred, I think, state that we can voluntarily enter into as we need it. Not 100% of the time, but something we can get used to and practice. So just as a final quick little picture of this, I heard a little story about a grandma driving her granddaughter, was in the back seat of the car, and the grandma noticed in the mirror that her granddaughter had the blanket over her head, and she said, "What are you doing, honey, back there? What are you doing? What's going on?" And she said, shh, I'm in my imagination. All right, so a peek into what solitude is and can do. And Greg's going to, we're tag teaming today, so he's going to come up and help us develop that a little more.
Thanks, Melissa. Yeah, we're doing a little tag team thing here today, which is kind of fun. So, I was thinking about the solitude stuff, and it was notable to me how often Jesus seemed to have been seeking it, right? He constantly was going away to finding different places. So I did a real quick survey of the Gospels, those four books in the Bible that talk about the life of Jesus, and I found, just in a quick survey, there's 13 times, 13 complete separate times when he goes to be away by himself, off to pray, whatever, and every time was a purpose, like sometimes it was off to pray, or simply it said to be alone, or sometimes it seemed to be like he was preparing for what was coming next. And then there was the big one. He started off his whole ministry with everybody by spending 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. I would call that solitude. And, I don't know what you think about that. 13 times, is that a lot? Is that not? But when you think about it, these Gospels, these books in the Bible are actually really pretty short, and they don't give us that much information of Jesus' life. And it was only a three-year span. I would actually say there's probably hardly anything else that comes up 13 times in those books of the Bible. So clearly, solitude, Jesus, I mean, this was a big feature. He was kind of a pulled-together kind of guy. That's my assumption. I don't know what you think of Jesus, but the fact that he needed that much solitude must mean that, yeah, there's something going on there. When I also think about solitude, I think about wilderness. And wilderness is something we've talked a lot about recently here with Fabric, because of the theme, that's just this constant theme that keeps coming up in the Bible. So what is wilderness? Wilderness is typically a place, right? I mean, if you look at that part of the Middle East, it's either a desert or it's a mountain. But the point of wilderness is not that it is a place. And this is on your outlines. It's not that it's a place. It's the effect that that place has on the person, right? I mean, that's what wilderness is always all about. It's a place where you are confronted with yourself. All those outside forces, all those distractions are stripped away, and you are left with your physical, emotional, mental self, and you really can't get away from it, you know? So solitude, what is solitude? Solitude is a state of being just with you. However you find that, wherever you find that. You see, being in solitude is never the goal. The goal is what you find there, right? The goal is knowing yourself. After all, you know, what do we always say? We say that you are designed for a community, right? We don't say you're designed for a solitary existence. No, you're designed for being in community. Everything about you, psychologically, emotionally, physically, intellectually, is all geared towards being in community. Vivek Murthy, in his book, you know, he emphasizes, he's pointing us towards solitude, but the name of his book is Together, right? I mean, the point of it is that solitude helps us to be able to be together. It is about being able to be in relationship. It's about being able to be in community. It's a cure to our endemic loneliness and separation that we often experience even when we are together, like Melissa was sharing with us. There's a wise guy long, long before the time of Jesus, Socrates, is reputed to have said, know thyself, right? You've probably heard that, know thyself. And while it makes a lot of sense to seek solitude to get away from all those outside forces that cover up and distract you from yourself, the goal isn't being away, is it? It's about knowing who you are. And I might add, learning to love who you are. Along with all of your flaws, all your mistakes, all of your regrets, as well as all of your gifts and all of your wonderful aspects, your strengths, your beauty, your wisdom, all of that together. But, you know, solitude may not sound like such a fun place for you. It can be lonely. It can be boring. It can be awkward. Being alone with yourself can even be kind of frightening. I've had people tell me that they were terrified to being, you know, caught at a place in a situation where they had to only be with themselves. You know, so I want to share a little story that maybe helps helps explain why being all alone can be so hard for us. This was about 20 years ago. I was doing some work with the Orfield Laboratories up in the Seward neighborhood. They do acoustic design and research. And they have what is reputed to be the quietest room in the world. And I got to go in it. And it was really, really weird. So you walk into this room, and it's about the size of these mats here, room for, 4 to 6 people. And you're standing on what looks like stretched out chicken wire. You know, you're not touching anything. And all around you, all 6 sides, above, below, and all the way around, are these long foam wedges and cones and pyramids absorbing any sound so that there is no sound ever reflected back at you. They warned us when we went in to not spend too much time because people that spend too much time there start getting headaches, in fact, start experiencing vertigo. And the reason is that inside there is absolutely no sound pressure, no sound coming into your eardrums. Now, in normal life, even when we think we're in really quiet places, there is this ambient sound around us all the time that is actually pretty loud. And so our inner ears have adapted to, exert pressure out to balance out this constant pressure in. And if you get in a situation where there is no pressure from the outside, your eardrums start bulging outward, and your eardrums are in your inner ear, and your inner ear is responsible for your sense of balance and a couple other things. And when your inner ear is unhappy, it usually lets your stomach know. You ever hear of motion sickness, right? That's all about your inner ear. It has nothing to do with what you ate for lunch, So when you're in this situation where there is absolutely nothing on the outside exerting pressure in, you start feeling this great discomfort inside. Now, they told me that if you would continue to spend time in here, day after day, you would gradually learn to adapt to that, and you would not feel all the discomfort of not having this external pressure exerted on you. Now, solitude works the exact same way. It's not about sound pressure, but it's about this constant pressure that we have of external stimuli, external inputs. It's your busyness that keeps you going all the time and keeps your mind going all the time. It's the people around you. It's the conversations. It's TV. It's radio. It's music. It's news. It's your news feed. It's social media. It's all the noise in our world that is just constantly pushing in on us all the time. It drowns us with this deluge of input on it so that we just cannot hear. We don't even notice. We don't sense what is on the inside of us. So, remember the insight from the quietest room in the world at Orfield Labs, right? It shows us the effect of that constant pressure of external stimulus so that we're uncomfortable when we only have internal stimulus, right? Stuff that comes from within us. Well, to be whole people, we need to learn to quiet all that external input so that we can tune into what's inside. And here's the deal. To tune into that inside, the deal is that solitude can give you a chance to attend to what's inside. Remember, Socrates said, "Know thyself," right? Now, that's tuning into what's inside. If that seems scary to you, remember that he did not say, "Perfect yourself." No, he said, "No, accept, make peace with what is in you. Yes, you are imperfect. Yes, you are under construction. You always will be. We all are. But that you that is deep within you, that is who you are, and it is precious. It is unique. It's holy, and it's worthy of love. Know that person." But like I said, it's hard to get to know what's inside, right? When we have this constant barrage of stuff from the outside going on 24/7 around us. So how do we do that? That constant deluge that I mentioned before, your busyness, your TV, the radio, music, advertising, news, newsfeed, social media, your phone, all that kind of stuff. So, it's not surprising, right? Why do you think being alone feels more like being by yourself than it does with yourself? Why do you think being alone feels often more like loneliness than really good company? Why do you think being alone is often boring rather than rich experience? Making us ask questions like, well, what am I going to think about? What am I going to do? I mean, how am I going to pass the time with all this other stuff that I normally have a steady stream of that keeps me entertained? If those dark shadows are something that you're afraid of, that are lurking there when you would be by yourself, if you think about being with yourself and you feel ashamed of what is there, or you maybe don't want to wade through all of those regrets that might be in your past, or if you find that spending time with yourself just sounds like torture because it's going to be incredibly boring, you know, I understand. I get it. It's hard to learn how to do that and how to separate some of those feelings from this thing that we need to do. So don't beat yourself up for it. It's tough stuff. Being comfortable with what is on your inside takes time. And just like being in the quietest room in the world, solitude takes getting used to. It isn't something that happens naturally very often for us. In fact, we live in a world that makes it almost impossible to find ways of being just with ourselves. And so we need to find ways to do that. But the big point is, it's good for you. In fact, it's good for all of us. And, you know, you don't have to like time alone. That's not the point. You don't have to like it. What you need to learn to like, in fact, I would say what you need to learn to love is what you find when you are alone with yourself. You need to be able to love who you are. So whether, you know, time alone sounds scary, whether it sounds shameful, whether it just sounds boring, yeah, it is that way. But what those things are actually signs of for you is that you need practice. You need practice doing it. So this solitude deal, you know, to tune into yourself, it takes time, like I've been saying. And, you know, remember Jesus, he was probably a pretty got-his-stuff-together guy and seemed to need to keep doing it. In fact, right up to the last night before he died, he went off and to seek that again. You know, so if Jesus needed it that much, what makes you think that you don't? Like, are you that much better than Jesus was? You've got that much more pulled together so that you don't need to find that solitude to get yourself together? Let me put it this way. You see, knowing yourself isn't something that you will ever finish. It is something that you will practice, and you will practice it forever. And pretty much like everything else that's really substantial in your life, what do we always say? Practice when it's easy so you have the skills you need when it's not, because there will be times in your life when you're really going to need it, and if you're not practiced, it's going to be really hard, and it's going to be really painful for you. So here's my suggestion. Time away with yourself is something to practice daily, weekly, and annually, okay? Now, I know that sounds maybe a little bit ambitious and maybe a little bit arbitrary, but stick with me here. I mean, you know, it's the spirit of the law, not the letter of it, so find ways to make this work. But at the same time, I think it's something to shoot for, and here's why. First of all, daily. Find moments every day. Find ways every day that you can find time with yourself. A check-in, a centering, remembering what it's all about, keeping your priorities and your values in front of you, right? Finding some constancy in the turmoil, the day-to-day stuff. Then, what is a time that you can set aside weekly that will be actually on your calendar and it will become sacred? Sacred meaning you uphold it for its own sake because you know it's really important. Yeah, sometimes you got to move it, right? Life is life. But you don't just skip it because you're busy. Because, you know, you're always busy, right? And the reason we find time away is because we are busy. Our busyness isn't a reason why we skip it. It's the reason why we find it, all right? And then there's that annual experience. Maybe this is an off-to-the-wilderness sort of experience, or maybe it's some other kind of substantial investment of time and focus that grounds you so that you have a sense, a bigger sense of who you are, so those daily and those weekly experiences have something to return to. They've got something to pull from, something to go back to. That's really important. Now, is this important? Yeah, I think it is. And here's why. And, you know, this may sound like kind of a strong statement to you, but I don't say it to make you feel guilty or to make you feel inadequate if you're not there yet, because I certainly not totally. But I say it because I think it's something that we all know, but maybe we, you know, are still working on. We're trying to face up to it for ourselves. And it's simply this. If the people you love are important, If showing up for this world in a way where you know your life matters and it's making a difference, if that's important to you, then I think maybe being deliberate about finding this time alone so that you know who you are should probably be worth the effort. I think it would be worth that effort. Start slowly. Build it up. Adapt to it. Learn how to learn from it. After all, if this was easy, everyone would be doing it. And if everyone was doing it, my guess is this world would be a better place than it is right now. And maybe we wouldn't be having Memorial Days where we have to be thinking about stuff like these 21 names on the front of our newspaper today. But we could be remembering and celebrating some different sorts of things. Brittany mentioned it in her welcome, but I hope you all know that I am going on a sabbatical for 3 months after a couple more weeks here. And Chris, my partner in life and partner in crime, is going along with me. And first of all, we just have to say thank you for this incredible opportunity to rest, to reflect, and to contemplate what's next for us and what's next for Fabric as well. A lot of people ask me, well, what are you going to do? And I kind of ambiguously say, well, we're not really doing anything special, but then again, we're doing something incredibly special. I mean, we're going to be spending a lot of time in wilderness, a couple of longer trips in the Boundary Waters, a lot of times sailing out on Lake Superior, both places, by the way, that a phone signal, let alone an internet connection, are very hard to come by, so we're not really going to even be trying. And then we have time. Chris's family has a cabin that is a quiet, wooded, just good place to be alone, too. And so that's kind of mostly what we're going to be doing. So wilderness has been an important part of our lives together. I don't remember which side that was. Chris and I would have been over on that one side of that spectrum there. It is where I find a deep rest for my soul. I can be really busy when I'm in the wilderness. I can be just physically run down when I'm out there, but I'm attending to different things. I'm hearing different things. I'm feeling different rhythms, and there's something about that that just really feeds me. For Chris, it's the same way, but in her own version of it. It's one of the things I would say that we share in common the most powerfully, and we have relied upon. We have shared it intensely over the entire length of our relationship together. Wilderness has been a place for us of discovery of each other, discovery of ourselves, discovery of the world around us. I would say that for us, it is a place and a time where we are humbled, we experience awe, where we start to get to know the universe, the bigger universe, in a way that both gives us meaning and perspective, the kind of stuff that we need for the rest of our lives. And I asked Chris if this was true for her, and she said it was. And, you know, she is someone that I can be with and still be alone. I can be with her and still be in solitude. I can still be my true self. And that's not easy to find with a lot of other people. Time alone together, restores our relationship. We try to do lots of other things on a daily and a regular basis that does it, but we seem to need these larger punctuations of wilderness adventures to make that all work. Your solitude, your wilderness may be different. You don't have to go camping. You don't have to go canoeing. You don't have to go sailing. You don't have to go backpacking. That's what we do, and I highly recommend it. But there are a lot of other ways of finding solitude. Some people find it in art or in writing. They find it in composing or playing music. They find it in dance. They find it in meditation. They find it in all sorts of different places, physical labor, humble service of other people. There's lots of ways to do it. The point is find yours. Experiment and keep trying new ways of seeking out solitude, even when you think you've already found your groove. The point? Find solitude. Find yourself.
One of my friends that's always, she's been a friend for 20 years by now almost, which is incredible. But she never stopped surprising me. But I remember that, like, with these weird things about her. And one time when we first met, I still remember this, learning. She just casually mentioned her cheese diary. she had a cheese diary. And she would, like, note all the subtleties and nuances of this of cheese here. And she introduced me to some really great cheese. So this is what I think to leave us is to be a connoisseur of yourself. So this friend was a connoisseur of cheese, right? You might be a connoisseur of things. And we're encouraging you to be a connoisseur of yourself. Be curious and look for those subtleties, those nuances. Approach yourself with wonder and expectation. Like, what am I going to discover? And get to know yourself in a way so deeply that it just kind of can begin to become second nature. And you can have that deeper knowledge that is baked in with as you spend time and spend this kind of wonder and curiosity. How do we do this? There are a million ways, and you're going to try a lot of them. We did a series called Stirrings, and there was this repeating message during that series that needed to be part of it every week. And it was the message that when you take the risk to look deep inside at yourself, to listen for what's going on inside, that you will hear a message that's exactly the message that I am who I am, that Yahweh, God, wants you to hear, because this is how Yahweh sees you and knows you. And that is that when you look deep down in yourself, you will discover something wonderful, something precious, something one of a kind. Not a monster, not a failure. You'll find a space of humility, but never humiliation. It's a place where you'll remember that you have a place as a partner with the God of your understanding to show up together in love. Beloved and loving of other people in the world. It's never too late to start embracing solitude. It's never too late to start again when you will get off track, when you will forget. Keep coming back. So this is a new word I like, and it's flossom. I've told some of you about it. So flawed and awesome. That's how God has seen you and always has and always will. You haven't ever hidden any of those flaws from God. So don't even try. Don't worry about it. And that is that self that God wants to be loved with and that God imagines you will find others to love. That whole and full and honest and flossom person that you are. So take your place as an honored partner with this moving, changing universe of really deep love that none of us can quite fathom. May it be so.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wanderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.